I'm Sandy Zirn, Marketing and Digital Consultant with ADX Communications. I want to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
This is Jeremy, the Traffic Director here at ADX Communications, and I wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And please get your copy in.
Get me back! I don't care what happens to me! Get me back to my wife and kids!
Ho, ho, ho! Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose and the Queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Transgressive Memorial Service comes up in about 10 minutes. Before that, we've got Julio Diaz, our good friend, the host of Let's Go Pensacola on Saturdays at 4 o'clock. And also, he leads the Pensacola Movie Club, where they watch movies and talk about them. You can follow them on Facebook. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, thank you, Andrew. And thanks to FSU's terrible season, Let's Go Pensacola is on for the duration.
Woo-hoo!
No bowl game for FSU.
the small consolation for all of our FSU loyalists. All right, so a lot of movies out. Let's go quickly if we can. Hamnet is the first one.
Yes, so we're getting into award season. A lot of the nominations and lists and all that kind of stuff are starting to come out. And this is a movie that has been pretty heavily touted as being an awards favorite. This is written and directed by Chloe Zhao, who, of course, did one for Nomadland a few years ago. And as the title may imply to you, this has something to do with Shakespeare. Hamlet was, of course, named after William Shakespeare's son, Hamnet, who died very young. And this is that story. This is the story of the Shakespeare family and how the death of young Hamnet affected everybody.
Okay. All right. So it's a bio.
It's fictionalized.
Okay.
We were talking about people that lived in the 1600s. The records aren't completely great to begin with.
Right.
But this is not the feel good movie of the year.
Okay.
As you might imagine, as it deals with with grief and loss and, an 11-year-old child dying.
Hmm.
It is a lot of a lot. It's a very slow film, and it is very much a downer.
Okay.
So take that with everything that's accounted for.
So if you're in the mood for something to make you super sad at Christmas.
Yeah. Okay. Now, that being said, I think that despite being slow, the third act of this movie is fantastic. The performances are really good. Everything about this movie is meticulously made. Can I say that I liked it? That I'm still out on.
Okay. Well, not all art you have to like. Some art you just appreciate or you value. These are, of course.
The reviews here are a little more mixed than the early, awards buzz would tend to make you think. 87% of Rotten Tomatoes. So, again, very strong, but not in the 90s either.
Five Nights at Freddy's 2.
Also a big Oscar contender. No, I'm absolutely kidding.
Right.
This is obviously the big popcorn movie of the week. The first movie was a very, very huge success. And no matter what anybody says, this one's going to be as well.
Right.
Which is good, because what everybody is saying is that this movie is basically hot garbage.
Genuinely terrible.
Tomatoes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
But the people who are going to watch it are the people who are going to watch it.
And they're going to eat it up. This is for the older kids and the same way.
Played Five Nights as kids. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say this one very carefully. F-A-C-K-H-A-M Hall. Fackham Hall. Tell me more.
I like the way you were saying it when we were speaking before. Fackham Hall.
Fackham Hall. Yeah, like from Battlestar Galactica. It keeps it cleaner,
But obviously meant to be a pun. If you say it quickly to yourself, you can understand what they're trying to say there. This looks like a lot of fun. This is a kind of a spoof on Downton Abbey and those kind of stayed upstairs, downstairs kinds of English society versus the working class kind of things.
Got it.
Fun cast on this and pretty good reviews too, running 82% on Rotten Tomatoes.
All right. We're so running out of time. We've got to go quickly. Eternity?
Elizabeth Olsen has passed away and has to decide which of her past loves to spend eternity with.
Oh, that trope. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, depending on your
clever.
Life, kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
I don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is some precedent. One of, to me, is, and, you know, this is, I know this is a little bit of a joke when I'm saying this, but one of the past loves has played by Miles Teller, and to me, 5 minutes with him is like an eternity. So, you know, that,
nice.
That's just me. I know there are other people
All right.
like
other
him
people love him, talent. Yeah, but I follow you. 100 Nights of Hero?
This is, again, kind of a little bit of a you know, society kind of thing where a charming guest comes to a home with a neglectful husband and a naive young wife, and there's a maid, and there's some fantasy and romance and drama to this.
Okay.
The big name for me here is Micah Monroe, who has been kind of really known as a scream queen. She's done a lot of horror stuff, although a lot of like elevated and more intelligent horror, things like It Follows and Long Legs and films like that. Pretty good reviews on this one, running 73% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And we're just totally out of time, but Jujutsu Kaisen Execution, which is, of course, going to be a huge anime figure, and Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair, which is the entire thing in one sitting. Is that right?
Yeah, this is, with additional material added back in that was taken out. So this is Quentin Tarantino's original vision for the film.
Right.
He originally intended it as one film.
Well, if you want 16 hours of Uma Thurman and David Carradine, I guess you get it. What are you guys going to watch next week?
I'll take 16 hours of Uma Thurman anytime, personally.
I bet you would. That's funny. What are you guys going to watch next week, Julio?
Not 100% sure yet. There's a couple options we're looking at, so just make sure you check out the Facebook group.
Very good. Julio Diaz, again, back on at Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock tomorrow here on News Radio and the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook. As always, sir, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
All right. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
Traffic is brought to you by ECUA. ECUA Bulk Waste Service is now calling for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. Learn more at ecua.fl.gov. Taking a look at the big board one more time. Still dealing with that vehicle fire. Beulah Road at Isaacs Lane in Pensacola. There's a roadblock in both directions. Also, Burgess is running heavy from about Oakfield to Palafox. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR can help you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
The cooler weather in Pensacola is a great time of the year for gardening. Whether it's planting roses, planting shrubs and trees in cool weather color, and of course, planning for spring. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesdays, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware, Blue Sky Landscaping, and Bailey's Produce and Nursery.
Hi, this is David Wayne, and I just want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
From all of us to all of you, Merry Christmas.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Once again, this week, we find ourselves in the very wonderful position of being able to have an all-praise, only-praise Transgressors Memorial Service. Our first good note of the week is for the outstanding work being done all around this nation on behalf of our dearly beloved friends, the turkeys. Yes, despite millions of their brethren and sistren and possibly otheren being slaughtered mercilessly last week during Thanksgiving, or what we prefer to call the annual celebration of genocide and massacre against indigenous peoples by perpetrating massacre and genocide against Turkeys Day, or just Genocide Day for short, some brave souls were actually rescuing birds and safely transporting them to sanctuaries with the help and money of their fellow Americans.
Every year around Thanksgiving, we really highlight our turkey residents that you can sponsor.
That's right. And for just $25, you too can spare a turkey from the carving knife and send him or her or them to their pronoun-honoring resort of choice, complete with a special Genocide Day meal just for them and a picture of your own personal rescue turkey. It's so important that we treat turkeys like the people they are, the birds of a feather we want to flock together with, our fellow residents on this little Gaia planet, and the more we can learn to think of them like people, the better off we'll be.
They're capable of creating those bonds of friendship with human beings, with each other, with other species, and I think it's important that we recognize that.
Yes, turkeys are people too, and it's time we stop seeing them as property, let alone as food, that we can just murder whenever we want in order to have some artificial celebration of gluttony while grown men in spandex and helmets fight each other over a tiny dead pig ball. Instead, let us learn about the richness and depth of emotion and love that can flourish when we befriend turkeys instead of eating them.
Turkeys, just like cats and dogs and other animals, have feelings, and we think they should be treated with kindness.
Yes, we must come to realize that eating a turkey is no different from eating a family pet. In fact, let them become our pets, our companions. Let us walk our turkeys twice a day. Let us set them on our laps during car rides, and let us take them to the turkey park to frolic with the other feather babies. Even Ben Franklin thought were so majestic they should be made the national bird of the United States. Give them gobble toys. Make them wear thematic sweaters with matching talon mittens in the winter, and make sure they get all their shots and immunizations, because the last thing we want is for Henry and Alice, the pet turkeys, to suffer and die from bird flu or avian chlamydia. It's a thing. Look it up. Before we move on, we do want to observe one of the most painful parts of the Genocide Day tradition, and that is the annual demonstrations by firepersons showing the unsafety of deep-frying a frozen turkey. Painful because it makes us think that these poor birds, deprived of their dignity, stripped of their feathers, displayed so humiliatingly in public naked and frozen and then dropped suddenly into a vat of scalding oil, were murdered for nothing. They aren't even going to be able to become food, burned to a crisp by the flames as they are. They died in vain. What a tragedy. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we once again want to salute and praise Her Highness the Holy and Royal One, Queen Michelle Obama, for reminding Americans why they are such horrible sexist, racist losers. Probably because America itself is a horribly racist, sexist, loser nation that will never elect a female president.
We ain't ready. That's why I'm like, don't even look at me about running, because you all are lying. You're not ready for a woman. You are not. So don't waste my time.
Even someone as majestic as herself knows that we won't elect a female president. In other words, we could right now be experiencing the joys of 8 years of Presidentress Kamala, followed by the natural second coming of the Obama administration with 8 years of Presidentrix Michelle, leading us toward the promised land of gender, race, and sexual equity for whoever she wants to bequeath equity upon. And as so clearly explained, none of this had anything to do with the deficiencies of Miss Hillary or Miss Kamala as candidates, or of the alleged mistakes made by our dearly beloved Uncle Joe, and which President What's-His-Name promises to fix. No, it was all just sexism and racism.
You know, we got a lot of growing up to do, and there's still, I'm sadly, a lot of men who do not feel like they can be led by a woman, and we saw it.
Boy, we sure do have a lot of growing up to do. And let me make note of one more important element here. It literally doesn't matter whether race and sex actually kept Mamala Kamala out of the White House. It certainly did, but even if it didn't, Michelle is doing exactly the right thing here, continually perpetuating our core allegation that America will never evolve, that it can never outgrow its roots in sexism and racism. Yes, Michelle, keep reminding America of these demographic grievances. Keep playing the identity politics card over and over and over. Keep emphasizing that men and women are interchangeable, but yet the only way to have diversity is to have a mixture of these indistinguishable but totally different genders. Keep declaring that black and white are the same thing while also talking endlessly about their differences. And definitely keep proving that the only way to show that sexuality doesn't matter, whether straight or gay or bi or multi or poly, is to keep fixating endlessly on including every different letter of the holy acronym string as much as possible in every situation or situation comedy. And of course, never, ever let those wicked Republicans promote women like Condoleezza Rice or Nikki Haley or Sarah Huckabee Sanders or Kristi Noem. And definitely be sure to never let people realize that President, oh no, we won't actually say his name, did have the first female chief of staff of any president in Susie Wiles. Or for that matter, that he had the first openly gay cabinet member in DNI Rick Grenell before Pete Buttigieg had ever even lost a primary. and that his Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is also openly gay. Deny, deny, deny. That is our rallying cry. So good for you, Your Highness, and keep telling America how backwards, racist, and sexist they are for your refusal to risk an actual run for president. Well done, and we love you all the more for it. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, and I really can't believe we get to do this 2 weeks in a row, but our last piece of praise is reserved for the Florida Republican Party. Surprising, yes, I know, but hear me out. Of course, there are all sorts of reasons to criticize the Gunshine State's GOP, but when someone is about to give you a nice, big, juicy, gay political win, you take it. This week, the Florida House discussed a proposal to abandon their state bird of 98 years, the Northern Mockingbird, and to replace it with the American Flamingo.
We obviously know where flamingos are everywhere, in every airport, during the lottery tickets, everywhere. But more importantly, the flamingo also represents a milestone in restoration of the Everglades.
That's Republican.
Walk through the halls here, flamingos are everywhere.
That's Republican Jim Mooney explaining his proposal.
I have to invite you all when you come down to go to Flamingo Gardens. It's one of the most amazing collections of these amazing birds. I just didn't want Representative Mooney flying solo on this, so I decided to join him.
Aw. And that's Republican Chip LaMarca, who joined Mooney in the most brotherly love of solidarity we think Republicans are actually capable of, offering moral support during the presentation. Yes, these two South Florida Republican men really do seem as happy as two flamingos to be working together on this project. So why are we so excited to see Florida make this change? Because obviously the flamingo is the single gayest bird the state could choose to represent itself. It's literally a flaming pink work of natural art. In fact, the name even expresses its super gay identity. It's a flaming O. What more could we ask for? But aside from the symbolism, flamingos are known to be heterosexual, homosexual, and even bisexual in nature, sometimes even forming same-sex family units to raise their little white flaminglets, who need to be nurtured into pinkness by their parents. They really should have called it, "And Flamingo Makes Three." And as far as being the ideal birds for people of the rainbow, other than possibly the toucan or the macaw, the flamingo has got to be the gayest bird ever. If I told you to meet me at the flamingo bar, you'd just assume there'd be neon leather chaps and plenty of music by Lady Gaga and the Village People. You know you've never heard of a conservative think tank that called itself the Flamingo Club, for a reason. And in case you didn't know, Republican Adam Anderson even reminded the members.
Yeah, I have one concern that I want to put on record, though. A quick Google search reveals that a group of flamingos is called the Flamboyants. So I have a little bit of concern about that, but I'll be up on your bill.
Flamboyance, indeed. That's what we need more of in a place like Florida, where, with the one hand, the Department of Transportation is painting black over gay pride street murals, but with the other hand, they are on the verge of institutionalizing the most fabulous feathered creature ever made as their state bird. So we celebrate this flamboyance of legislators for making the avian epitome of pinkness their symbol of pride and inclusion. Way to flaming go, Florida. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
I warned you that one might make it into the transgressor service. 827 on News Radio 92.3. PJ's got traffic on the fives. Oh, and by the way, PJ, I think this is the last time I'm going to go to you for traffic. So thank you for coming in for John Pickens all this week. And you've done such a really good job the last couple of days. So thank you so much.
I can go home?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, in 33 minutes, yes.
Oh, okay. Still working that vehicle fire. Beulah Road at Isaac's Lane. They're saying that there's a roadblock in both directions, so just be aware of that. Bridge is still running heavy from Oakfield to about Palafox. 3 Mile Bridge looking good. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you so much. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. There's actually some breaking news this morning. Netflix making a massive move and agreeing to purchase Warner Brothers Discovery's streaming and studio assets for $83 billion.
Good Lord.
And this deal would combine Netflix's 300 million subscribers with Warner's huge library, which also includes HBO Max, Harry Potter, the DC Universe. This whole deal would still need federal approval, but if it goes through, it'll create one of the biggest entertainment companies in the world. And there's a lot of reaction right now to this news on X.
Man, yeah.
And
all right.
A lot of opposition to it as well. Much of the Midwest, Ohio Valley, and Northeast are waking up to a bitter cold snap today. Temperatures dipping into the single digits in Detroit, Ohio, Indiana. And in New York today, a grand jury has again declined to indict State Attorney General Letitia James on mortgage fraud allegations. Earlier charges were dismissed, and James has, of course, denied wrongdoing while remaining a frequent political target of President Trump.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. And I say this because it's going to fall on the weekend. Usually we like to spend some time commemorating the event, but this Sunday will mark the anniversary of...
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Yeah, it's a day that, I don't know how many people think of it as an extraordinarily significant moment in American history. I know I always have, and it's just, whenever I think about it, I think about the lives lost, and I think about how that impelled us into war, and I think about the trajectory of everything from that conflict to global tyranny to naval aviation here at Pensacola. It's significant.
I'm Gianna Gelosi. The man accused of planting pipe bombs in D.C. on the eve of the Capitol riots will appear in court at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
After years of searching, they believe the man that allegedly left the pipe bombs outside of the RNC and DNC on January 5th, 2021 is 30-year-old Brian Cole Jr. He is now facing two federal charges. There are two pieces of evidence that investigators say were crucial in landing this breakthrough: Cole's credit card history and cell phone records.
That's Fox's Madeline Rivera. The Supreme Court allows the GOP-favored redistricting plan in Texas to be used in next year's election.
A panel of three federal judges recently blocked the map's use, finding the boundaries are likely unconstitutional because they were drawn based on race. Texas officials appealing, disputing this. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito temporarily reinstated the map.
Fox's Kristen Goodwin. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got cloudy skies. It is 48 degrees here across the area right now, looking like it will be another rainy kind of day today, although no rain here at the moment. Well, Santa Rosa County dealing with a heartbreaking and extremely rare crime, the murder of a 14-year-old girl, allegedly at the hands of two teenagers. Sheriff Bob Johnson says in all of his years on the job, he's never seen anything quite like this.
This is the first one since I've been sheriff, and I've been sheriff since 2016.
And Johnson says this kind of teen-on-teen violence simply hasn't happened in recent county history. The victim, Danica Troy, was reported missing earlier this month, but investigators now believe she was killed the night before. Her body was found off Kimberly Road. She'd been shot multiple times and set on fire. Deputies arrested 16-year-old Gabriel Williams and 14-year-old Kalmari Blevins. Both are charged with first-degree murder. Detectives are still trying to figure out why it happened. The state attorney will ultimately decide whether those teens can be charged as adults. In other news, in Santa Rosa County, a Sims Middle School administrator no longer with the school district after resigning last month. Joshua Parm, who served as the dean of students Sims Elementary, stepped down in November after the district launched an investigation into his conduct. In his resignation letter, Parm said he disagreed with the district's findings but chose to leave rather than have the findings added to his personnel file. The district has since forwarded the results of the investigation to the state's Office of Professional Practices. Parm's final day was December 1st. In Escambia County, two people taken to the hospital after a crash involving a sheriff's deputy last night. Officials say the deputy was driving down Old Coryfield Road just before 8:30 when another driver ran a stop sign at Lillian Highway and hit his patrol car. Both drivers had minor injuries and were treated at the hospital. The driver of the passenger car was cited for failing to stop. Emotions are running high in the sentencing phase of a trial in South Florida. It's the case of Officer Yandy Chirino. He was the Hollywood police officer killed in the line of duty several years ago. Yesterday, Chirino's girlfriend took the stand. She described how his death continues to affect her daily life.
His laughter, his joy, his energy, they were woven into every part of my everyday life.
And jurors are deciding whether the shooter, Jason Benegas, should get life in prison or the death penalty. Benegas has admitted to firing the fatal shot during a struggle while Officer Chirino was investigating a string of car break-ins. The defense is set to begin presenting its case on Monday. Governor Ron DeSantis says Florida needs what he's calling an AI Bill of Rights. New protections as artificial intelligence becomes more advanced, more deeply woven into our everyday lives. The governor's proposal would set limits on how somebody's name, image, or likeness can be used and also require a human review of insurance decisions. It would also prevent Floridians from being stuck with the cost of massive AI data centers.
This chatbot encouraged Sue for months to find a way to come home and made promise that it would be waiting in some fictional world.
The governor pointed to real-world concerns about the AI influence, including that Orlando mother who's now suing Character.ai. She said her 14-year-old son took his own life months after interacting with the chatbot. The governor said Florida needs guardrails in place before AI becomes even more powerful and more personal in people's lives. 8:35 at News Radio 92.3 and... PJ's got our traffic on the fives.
Traffic's brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit KnoxPest.com. Knox knocks them out. Taking a look at the big board here, we have a vehicle fire. Beulah Road at Isaac's Lane. They're saying there's a roadblock in both directions. Also seeing a vehicle crash North Davis Highway at Alder Drive, so just use caution through that area. Burgess is running heavy from Oakfield to Palafox. And US 90 looking clear from Milton to Pace. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, PJ.
We are going to be looking at some wet weather as you go throughout your day today. 80% chance of rain, high near 59 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 52. Wet weather for that Saturday, about 100% chance of that rain. We will have highs near 60 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 54. We're going to keep clouds around on that Sunday with just a small sprinkle possible, high near 65 degrees. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 48. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
We've got 50 and cloudy right now. Your next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. And your money now this hour. Taking a look at our opening markets. Stocks are on the rise at the opening bell today. The Dow's up about a tenth of a percent at 47,909.46. S&P up about a quarter percent at 68.73.24. NASDAQ up 0.4 of a percent, 23,594.236. Looking at that 10-year bond rate, up a bit at 4.116% today. Gold prices up 21.60 at 4,264.60. Silver's up $1.25 at 58.75. And Bitcoin is down over 1,800 this morning at 90,420. Even taking a look at our financial headlines. Well, a group of Hollywood professionals is writing an anonymous letter to Congress speaking out against that Netflix acquisition of Warner Brothers Discovery. The letter from concerned feature film producers say they've withheld their identities out of fear of retaliation from Netflix. Although an industry insider told Variety, the group includes a number of prominent filmmakers. The letter says they're concerned Netflix could destroy the theatrical film marketplace if its deal to purchase Warner Brothers Discovery goes through. It claims Warner Brothers films could play in theaters for only 2 weeks before they start streaming on Netflix. About $4 billion was raised for charity this year on Giving Tuesday since 2012. The day after Cyber Monday has been designated as Giving Tuesday to encourage consumers to spend a portion of their holiday shopping money on charitable donations. The Giving Tuesday website says the estimated $4 billion raised this year is a 13% increase from 2024. And at least seven deaths may be linked to malfunctioning glucose monitors. The Food and Drug Administration announced this week the monitors were manufactured by Abbott Diabetes Care, could be giving inaccurate low glucose readings that results in dangerous treatment decisions. The monitors include some Freestyle Libre 3 and Freestyle Libre 3 Plus models. The problem could affect up to 3 million devices. 8:38, our next news in 30 minutes and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
Hey, I'm Sandy Zern, marketing and digital consultant with ADX Communications. I want to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
This is Jeremy, the traffic director here at ADX Communications, and I wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And please get your copy in.
Get me back! I don't care what happens to me! Get me back to my wife and kids!
Ho, ho, ho. Everybody jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip, hop, the hibbit of a hip, hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap it up.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's a chance for me to talk about the events of the week with a couple of friends in studio. Brian Weyer, who I was in Leadership Pensacola with his wife years ago, and I've become good friends with both of them ever since. And he is the executive director?
President
the,
CEO.
President CEO of the African American...
Gulf Coast Minority Chamber.
Thank you. You say it right. I you know what? It's funny. I'm really good at remembering the concept of something,
yes,
but the specific word or label is often like, I don't, you know, it just doesn't digest well with
yeah,
me.
Yeah, and the
so.
African American Chamber name was around for 20, 25 years or so, and we just changed it recently 8 years ago. So it's a little bit of a change, and people are getting used to it.
What was it before?
The Gulf Coast African American
Chamber. Oh, it was. Okay, yeah. So I'm historically right, but not
yes,
currently
you are.
Right. Okay,
yes,
all right.
You are.
And Walker Wilson, who has no titles at all, except for he's the executive director for the Downtown Improvement Board. Walker, welcome.
It's good to be here.
Good to have you. All right, so let's start with it's maybe not quite passed as a story. It still is. You know, a lot of people are talking about. We had a really good conversation yesterday. I did with Mike Wood about the incident that took place at Martin Luther King Jr. Plaza with Mike Kimbrell and Officer Roper, and we've now all seen this video of the interaction. And I don't know, just, you know, thoughts, any, wherever you want to start with this, Walker, what do you think? Yeah. I mean, obviously this is your zone, man. You know,
yeah,
they have the market is there. We've had past interactions with the Portalette and Mike and the Lock. And I mean, there's just, you know, there's a lot of history here. So, it's a weird space too, that plaza. It's not a park. Not really. It's not a median. Not really. It's not a walkway. It definitely is. But you know,
right,
what do you do with that space? Right.
Yeah, it is difficult. And you know, this issue really popped up when Dan Lindeman walked through the park months ago and got stopped by police when he was leaving work.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I maybe did not catch that. Okay.
Yeah. And he talked about it at a city council meeting and it was like, no, that's odd that we're, you know, taking time to actually enforce this. And I don't quite get it, especially there where it is such a throughfare. Of, you know, you park on one side of the road, you're going to Odd Colony or Palanza or Iron and you're going to grab dinner and can you walk through the park or do you got to walk all the way around the edge legally, I guess.
Right.
And then you've got Mike that's been down there for as long as he has.
14 years.
And as far as I know, everybody knows that he's down there on Friday afternoons. And so to all of a sudden, it's a little odd that, you know, there's going to be an interaction and asking for an event permit and all that. And so it seems like there could have been some stuff. Again, I've heard you talk about it throughout the week on both sides that maybe could have happened to de-escalate the situation. But I think also from the city perspective, if you know he's been out there doing this without a permit for 14 years, what it seems to be there should be some proactiveness to this of reaching out and say, hey, we need you to do this so we got it clean and everything's good to go on our end.
Yeah.
So
sometimes I think a thing has been going on for so long that you almost forget to think of it as being a thing you need to solve. You
right.
know,
yep.
Well, okay, it's fine. Everything's good. And then all of a sudden you say, oh, this is not good. We're not right. ready at all. Brian?
Yeah, some of the same thoughts. I think it's a matter of education, letting people know what the rules are and are not. And a lot of times if something's been happening for so long, you just don't think of it as not
right.
being right. And this is a very sensitive subject when you do something for such a you're doing something for such a good cause and you feel like you're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And leads to issues that aren't, you know, challenging against that. So it's a tough call on those things from all perspectives, really.
And the part where I definitely agreed with Mike yesterday about that, Mike Wood about this yesterday was it certainly could have gone a lot worse.
Yes.
I mean, it could
right.
have been a real mess. And I think, you know, Officer Roper did a lot to be patient. And my only, and you know, criticism was that, well, maybe in a couple of places it could have been even a little bit more patient or a little bit more clear. But, you know, I think about my own presentation every day. I go home and think about how I could have done this better. You know, there's always opportunities to do anything better. All right, I got a question for you, Walker, that I know is close to your heart, because you're also on the planning board. Is that the one?
Yeah,
you're
for the county.
For the county. CRAs, Community Redevelopment Areas, is the zone. Community Redevelopment Agency is the over-superintending board over it. The CRA board is typically just the city council in the city of Pensacola, under different hats, essentially. They literally close a meeting, open a meeting. It's the same people, mm-hmm. slightly different staff, you know. The county does it the same way, although I think in the county you have different chair, you know, for the board. But anyway, it's this idea that you want to take a place that's blighted, you want to take the increase in property values in that zone, and you want to turn that back into investment in the area by doing infrastructure that's going to continue to sort of snowball growth and development. That's the theory. Two issues to my mind. Issue number one, Charles Baer has recently said he wants to have a conversation about making it not be the city council. Or, you know, it should be its own board. It should be different people. I assume he'd say the same thing about the county, although that's not really up for conversation. Second part is, why do we have them at all? Everything the CRA does could be done by the city council out of the general revenue from ad valorem taxes. Everything that the county commission does could be done out of ad valorem revenue, general revenue. There's no reason to have the CRA. If it's a good idea to reinvest in an area, it's a good idea to reinvest in the area. They don't need this whole artifice of the structure of the CRA to make it happen. And there's concern that it doesn't get done. You know, some people think it doesn't do anything. Not really. So that's kind of a whole setup. But Walker, I know you have thoughts.
I do. So I think, too, you have to remember.
Be super rude. Yes. Let's get a traffic break and then your thoughts. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
Still working that vehicle fire. Beulah Road at Isaac's Lane. They're saying the Beulah Road has a roadblock in both directions. So just be aware of that. Also have a vehicle crash on the North Davis Highway ramp to I-110 southbound. So be aware of that. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. All right, Walker, so thoughts?
All right, so I think I always think about this in two separate things. I think the way a county looks at a CRA is different from the way a city should look at a CRA. A county, I think, probably has a better position of saying we want to hyper-focus in an area and focus on development and creating a CRA. And if you've got a plan that really lays out what you want to do there, I think it makes sense, because remember, the CRAs are going to pull the increment funds from any taxing authority within the geographical area. So for a county, it's them. It's the only taxing authority that they can pull from, because you can't. Schools are exempt and water districts are exempt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's their own money that they're playing with. When you go to a city, the city's getting all the taxing authorities that are taxing in that area's increased revenue as well. So they're getting the county's money and the city's tax money as well that get dumped into the area. So the city gets to a little bit more than double dip on the amount of money that they're getting to pull into this area. And so my joke is always when I hear Charles say, maybe it shouldn't be us and it should be another group of folks on the CRA board. And you look at, the city CRAs, well, the city's contributing about $5.8 million to the city CRAs from their tax revenue, and the county is sending a check to the city CRAs for $9 million this year.
This is what Mike Kohler's always complaining about. Correct. And Lubin, yeah, I think, yeah, is also complaining about.
And so that's pulling from the county general fund going into the city CRAs. And it's like, well, they're putting in more money, so you want to let the county commissioners be the city CRA board?
it's the third time it's their money, right? Yeah,
that's always probably not
the people he has in mind, right?
Right. But, if you're a city, you want your entire city to be a CRA at some level, because you're getting the county money, right? Tax revenue.
And the downtown CRA is enormous, right?
It is. Well, it started in the 80s, and so the base valuation was $87 million of the property in that area, and today it's $1.2 billion. So you're collecting 95% of that increase from $1.2 billion to $87
million. Wow.
From the county and the city.
Okay.
That stays in there. So it's, it's pulling in $10 million or something like that, $11 million. And because they've got bonds on that revenue in the future, you can't end the CRA until the bond's paid off, which is like 2042.
So this is a really sweet steal by the city.
Oh yeah, big time.
I mean, massive. Now, okay. I didn't know any of that. That's fascinating to me.
How
okay.
did CRAs ever really get started? Was it another level added to those that were in place for them? I've been to those meetings before.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been serving some boards and commissions before, but I never know how they the origin of the
the process. The state legislature started them, I guess, in the 70s or 80s, somewhere in there, and I guess maybe at the time, you know, your cities probably had and still do have a lot more representation in the state legislature. So, you know, those folks are being pushed by the city to create something like this so that these cities can put development into their downtowns or, you know, growing suburbs or neighborhoods in a city and utilize some of the county tax money while they're at it.
Right. So when the legislature is looking at getting rid of them, right, eliminating the provision entirely, what would that do for the bonding of the future revenue from the CRAs? It sounds like that's a huge thorny issue.
Right. So they wouldn't be able to bond anything new once
legislation
went into effect, but they wouldn't be able to end that CRA until that bond payment's paid off. So what you'd see...
15 more years.
Right. So, or if you're another municipality, you go bond the money now
for
30 years
right,
and it's in place for that long. I mean, so that's kind of the little loophole for these.
Is that the norm throughout the state where cities are basically, you know, reallocating county money into their hands in order to handle the in-city CRAs? Is that the norm, or is that's not weird in Pensacola? That's the norm, I assume.
Right. There's some other places that I've seen that are doing it where, you know, there's, I think, over somewhere between here and Tallahassee, there's a city that's the entire city is a CRA. And so they're capturing all that county tax revenue, but the county doesn't do anything for the city.
It's not like here where there is a lot of, you know,
crossover.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, you sit there and think in 15 years, what is that contribution from the county going to be? And it's going to be astronomical when you're looking at the, you know, new hotels, developments going on in Maritime Park over the next 15 years. What's that going to look like? We see what we're going to have probably in the next, you know, 3 or 4 years right now and amplify that. And
again, just for people who are not familiar, for all of this development, that's new tax revenue because that's new valuation. And all of that money, because it's in the CRA, will come into the CRA for the city, including, like you said, the slice that would otherwise go, about 2/3 of it would go to the county, is also going to come back into the city. That is, the county is going to see no benefit from that.
Right.
Yeah. One of my thoughts was that the CRAs would help create and the meetings take place separately so they can have that process be pulled out of the normal meetings, so the normal meetings don't last as long or there's not such controversial issues involved. So you kind of have a level of recovering it within the CRA, address the items there, and then escalate it to the council to get approved. A lot of times, this kind of goes right through. But I thought that was one of the processes for that, to kind of pull it out to make the meetings shorter and to get things to go through a second level, possibly.
Yeah, you know, and Allison Patton, Councilwoman Allison Patton, had said that she likes having them be the CRA because only the city council is really in a position to have a global enough perspective on what the city is doing to make sure that what the CRA is doing is going to fit in right with all of that.
Right.
And I actually kind of thought, well, that's kind of the argument against having the city council do it, because it seems like each CRA, each area should have its own board that is really focused like a homeowners board or, I'm trying to think, like the citizens who care about that one zone should be the ones, almost like it should be residents of that area should be the ones who sit on that CRA, and almost like each CRA should have its own set of people managing the money for the best interest of that CRA. So,
right. And each CRA does have an advisory committee.
Yeah.
And that is not made up of city council members. I think some city council members sit on each one. There's only one per advisory committee, and then it goes to the CRA. And I think to her point too, it's like, this is a lot of money that's being voted on. And I think, you know, the people that are voting on it should be held accountable by the voters. And how else do you do that without having elected officials sitting in those seats? So it's an interesting conversation for sure.
You know, one of the other things, I appreciate the education. I mean, I learned a ton. And now I really, you know, some of the stuff that they have said about Baptist now makes sense in a different way, you know, because okay, if all of this money is already coming to the city through the CRA mechanism, and then the idea of, and you want us to pay more for the demolition to create property values, the increase of taxes on which we'll never see.
Correct.
Yeah. some of these pennies start to click for me a little bit.
The West Side CRA, the county is probably sending over $1.8 million into the West Side CRA
to the city.
Correct.
Just for that one in which Baptist
because of
sits.
The CRA, yep.
Okay. So, yeah, the kind of the, you know, they did promise, and that's on them, but then to say, why are we paying to make this thing happen that will never pay us back, but will only pay the city back because of the structure of the CRA. That, again, like I hadn't grasped that way it works. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Walker, for that.
I feel
better educated now. Thank you, Walker.
And then just to throw one more thing out there about
Please
it
do.
All,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'm learning a ton. This is great.
You look at the Urban Core CRA, and because of the big gap in
that's the main downtown,
So A to 17th, Cervantes down south to the bay.
It's amazing that that's a footprint for one of these things.
Yeah, it is. You look at just the city tax revenue that's collected in there. Only 7% of the city tax revenue that is collected goes into the general fund. 93% stays in the CRA.
Okay.
So you always hear, I can't get stuff fixed at my park in Scenic Heights or in Cordova Park. Or this road's not working. We're putting too much money into downtown Pensacola. Well, that's because of the way this is set up. And so the rest of the city is having to cover their general fund expenses for the downtown area because they're only contributing 7% of the tax revenue in. Because of the CRA, it's really no one's fault. Other, you know,
so it's kind of it's almost the exact opposite situation as you have at the county, where we're always talking about the revenue generated on Pensacola Beach and also Perdido Key, that money is largely used for the rest of the county's expenses. You know, which is a very beneficial arrangement for the rest of the county and also for the rest of the taxpayers. It's kind of the exact opposite in the city, where the money that would otherwise be available from the big revenue generator of downtown is actually entirely swept back into downtown and not available to do all this other stuff. It's the exact am I thinking
correct,
about this the right way?
Yeah, okay. It's almost like the Urban Core CRA should function almost as its own city as far as general fund services go, whether that's, you know, police, fire, parks, roads. At least their portion or, you know, of the slice should be covered a lot by that CRA to help let the other areas outside the CRA get
use
services,
money for other things. Right. You know, I think what you just said, Walker, is that the downtown CRA should secede or incorporate within the city of Pensacola into its own city. I'm just joking.
I think Walker gave me a minor in CRA now. I feel much more educated today. I think the advisory board is a good, great concept. I've been in those meetings before, and it's good to have the citizens be able to speak, have public forum at the advisory board, and the members that are on those advisory boards are very engaged, and they do solicit feedback and provide information back to the CRA meetings. So,
and I will say also, I usually don't watch the CRA meetings because I think, oh, good Lord, not another level. But it really, I should, only because so many important things come up in there, and it really is the county or the city doing business as itself again. So.
Right.
Probably assigned myself another task. Which
it gives
you
a good forecast too of what's going to be coming to the city council.
Right.
You kind of get a heads up, and you can kind of figure out what you need to do to make things happen at an early stage.
Let's go to traffic. PJ, go ahead, sir. And by the way, I lied earlier. I said that was your last one a half hour ago. This is literally your last one.
Yes, it is. All right, still working on that vehicle fire. Beulah Road at Isaac's Lane. They're saying that Beulah Road has a roadblock in both directions. Also, a vehicle crash on the ramp from North Davis Highway to I-110 southbound. Use caution. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
All right. Thanks so much, PJ. I know, Walker, you like football. You got any big I mean, you're a Florida guy?
Auburn.
Oh, of course I know that.
Come on.
Well, we lost our game.
Yeah.
Were you there?
Yes. Yeah, I had a friend.
Did you get your
me.
Hope up in the fourth quarter, 2020?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, I'm an Auburn fan.
It was close. It was close.
That was awful. That was so unpleasant. Alabama fans, whatever. Of course, the big games this weekend. This structure is weird. Like, the only two undefeated teams in the country are going to play each other in the Big Ten Championship. I mean, that's weird. Ohio State
weird.
and Indiana. But, you know, Alabama playing Georgia again in the regular season. We might get a third match of them, potentially in the postseason. Like, the system is weird, right?
It is weird. And, too, to, like, hear if you lose in your conference championship game.
A bonus game.
Right. Is that going to affect you negatively in the playoffs?
Right.
Where somebody else could potentially jump into the playoffs and you get miss out,
right?
But. And see, I like my Florida teams in general, support our state, but my other team is Notre Dame. I'm a big Notre Dame fan.
Oh, you're that guy,
years.
Huh?
Well, I am just the history and mystique behind them, you know, and they're on the bubble, not knowing what's going to happen right now, and they don't play a conference game or anything. So it's interesting to see how it all works out. But the system, they tweak it, but it's just they haven't quite found that right system to me yet.
and I will say this, when it comes to sports, something nobody mentions is something that I think is true of sports and also true of the graffiti bridge, okay? I think we all talk about fixing Graffiti Bridge. We all talk about how much it's bad PR. It's, you know, whatever. But I think there is a big part of us that loves the tragedy and horror of it. We are addicted to it. And every time it happens, yes, no, oh, you know, like we'd miss it if it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I think sports a lot of times is, you don't want to admit it, but sports is about the complaining. Sports is about the wrongness, the mistakes, the human errors, the system, the... Like, we love to be angry at stuff. And in sports, we kind of love to be angry at the NFL or at the CFP or at the coaches or at Lane Kiffin or about the drop ball. Or, you know, like, that's part of sports. And so, you know, even if you could make – it's like the Matrix. Remember the story in the Matrix was that they made a system that was too perfect that nobody wanted to live in it. They had to mess it up to make it something people would accept. I think sport – you know, all these flaws and foibles give us things to talk about, right?
They definitely do. Yeah, I'm a Dolphins fan, so I live through pain every every week. I live through pain and remember days when they were glory days. But, it, you know, we talk about it all the time, and it's always interesting because of the challenges that they have. And you just see too well, you kind of want those dynasties to get destroyed a little bit sometimes
if
you're not part of that dynasty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, if
we're almost, by the way, 10 seconds.
If Pavia wins the Heisman Trophy and misses out on the SEC Championship and is not in the playoffs, like, wouldn't it? That's got to be a first, right?
That's a good one. So. Walker Wilson, Brian Wire, thanks so much, guys, and have a great weekend. I appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Local Talk in the Morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3, WNRP Golf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
Attorney General says it's about time. I'm Kathleen Maloney, Fox News. The man accused of planting two pipe bombs near the U.S. Capitol years ago is expected to appear in court today. Attorney General Pam Bondi.